Hello and welcome to this edition of Passionate About People. I'm Phil Dave, a broadcaster who specializes in technology and men's health and well-being. Joining me on this episode is Graham Godfrey.
Hello.
Graham, remind everyone a little bit about yourself.
I'm a life and business coach, and my whole values are around loving what you do and reigniting your passion.
Also on this episode is Grant Morgan. Grant, tell everyone who you are and what you do.
I'm Grant Morgan. I'm a happily married father of four, although I'm not sure that those two words, happily and married, should ever be conjoined. And I run a business called Louis Kennedy, which I can tell you a little bit more about through our chat.
Well, the premise of this episode is going to be about failing our way to success. And I believe that the best starting ground that we could come up with, gentlemen, is what our vision of success actually looks like.
As a coach, I come across a lot of people that are looking for happiness and fulfillment in their life. And in business, we find that many people who want success are scared of failure, and they have a fear of failure. What I'd like to talk about today is failing is probably the only option. Nobody starts off at the top. Most people need to keep trying and keep trying to find their niche, to find what they're good at. There's a saying, practice makes perfect, but my view is that failing makes perfect. If you can find out what doesn't work for you, then you can find what does. And when you find your niche and you've got that magic formula for life and for business, you can then launch yourself forward very, very quickly. And a lot of the people that I speak to say to me, well, if I fail a lot, it must mean I'm a failure. But the truth is that if you can learn what works for you, then you can get into a happier place a lot quicker.
And you see, it's very interesting that you say that, because Grant, I don't know about you, but I believe that for so long now that we have bred a society that are brought up to believe that you can't fail. It's not you can't fail as in you must not fail. It's you can't fail as in you can't do wrong. In other words, it's teaching people that things don't go wrong in life, that things will always go your way, which, of course, to those of us who know, is frankly the biggest load of bunkum.
Failure by whose benchmark? We have to crystallize it. I remember when my children were very young. I had four under four. And as they got older, I used to say to them that we're all in line. We're all in a queue. And there are people behind you and there are people in front of you. And invariably, by virtue of the family that they were born into and the privileges that they had, there would be far more people behind them than ever in front. Now, there is absolutely nothing wrong in wanting to get ahead of the queue. But if you've identified somebody in that queue and you want to be them, the chances are, once you get there, once you attain that level, once you're in their place, there'll be somebody ahead of them that you'll want to be. And ultimately, you will never be happy. Now, I don't think it's in our DNA to ever be happy with our place in the queue. But those that are, invariably, are quite satisfied. So I go back to what I just asked. Failure by whose benchmark?
I think based on that is successful people fail eagerly and failures avoid failure. So I think in order to get to the place further in the queue, you need to understand what your capabilities are and what skills that you need to develop in order to get further forward in your life.
That's a brilliant point and something that I've spoken about regularly. And that is, the most successful people that I've met in my life, be it in business, well, especially in business, accept their failings and surround themselves with people that have the skills that they do not have. Now, that is a skill in itself, to identify that which you're not very good at and then surround yourself with the people who can harness those skills. The majority of people who don't recognize that within themselves invariably do and will fail.
Ah, but isn't that just another bit of a problem, though? Because, okay, some people may be very good at that, determining what their, quote, failures are or what they need to improve on. But could it go too far the other way? Could it be that some people are so self-critical that they get so hung up on one particular issue that they actually fail to see what they're good at and focus on that?
I think that we're brought up, our default is negative. When somebody says, how are you? Most people will say, not bad. And I'll say, well, what definition of not bad is that? You very rarely you get people that will say, yeah, I'm good, thanks, which is the normal response. Or you might get some people that say, yeah, I'm really good. And if you try it, if you say to someone, I'm really good, they'll normally say, well, what's happened? Well, nothing's happened. And I think it's our focus. So a lot of people focus on what they don't want. You can imagine when somebody is ill, they focus on the worst possible outcome. Especially people with anxiety, they focus on the worst possible outcome. And anything better than the worst possible outcome is a relief. But if we're able to do that, we're also able to focus on the best possible outcome. What's the best thing that can happen to me? But the default position is actually a good position to be in, because we're not robots, and feeling negative and feeling a sense of anxiety and fear is a good thing, because that's the place from which you can launch. That's your mind telling you that you need to move away from the pain that you're in into a better place.
You mentioned the best thing that can happen. Now, you're aware that the worst thing that can happen to somebody has happened to me. I lost my beautiful boy last year, and my starting point is very different to many because of that. You and I have discussed this at some length. You're aware that I live my life free of stress. I keep negativity out of my life. I don't sweat the small stuff, because the worst thing that can happen to a human being has happened to me and my family. So I lead a very calm and balanced life. And that negativity that I speak of, I believe we have two types of negativity in our life. There's the negativity we can control, invariably coming from human beings, and there's the negativity we can't control. I couldn't control the negativity that made my son pass. He was afflicted with a really, really rare form of cancer that only 100 people on the planet had ever been diagnosed with. Totally outside of my control. But the negative energy that people give, you can control that. You can park them. You can keep them outside of your life. You don't have to talk badly of them. You don't have to speak ill. You can just park them. And it's that whole thing that if you put negative energy into the universe, I do believe that that negativity comes back. Now, you can apply that to success and failure. A positive mindset, believing that you are going to succeed, the chances are you'll have a far better chance of success than a negative belief that you can't do it.
But Grant, do you think that, and first and foremost, let me say how sorry I am to hear what you and your family have been through, and I dare say there'll be plenty of others listening who think exactly the same. But do you think that you were of that mindset before tragedy struck, or was it only since then that you've seen life in that way?
No, I was already on that journey, Phil, long before Jack was diagnosed, about not sweating small stuff, about keeping negativity out of my life. I've run a business for 30 years. There have been some very successful times. There have been some really challenging times. And I think if I'd have adopted the mantra that I have now then, it would have been a calmer journey. But losing Jack has certainly made me the person that I am today. And it's given me a focus and a drive that I probably wouldn't have had in abundance that I do, because Jack taught us of something called a survivor's obligation. Many people who survive cancer have a survivor's guilt, guilty that they survived, whereas Jack turned that into a survivor's obligation, that you have an obligation to be the best version of yourself. He passed that baton on to myself and my wife and my kids after he passed, that we have to live our best lives and we have to be the best versions of ourselves. And I accept that you have to be wired in a certain way. It has to be in your DNA to be able to take and run with that baton. But we have.
I have to say, which is part of the reason why I really wanted to do this podcast with Grant, is that he is one of the most inspirational people that I've met. And he has taught me so many lessons. Some of the things that used to upset me, I mean, don't sweat the small stuff, is sort of within my DNA now. And I have a saying to myself, which allows the negative things to pass. I just say to myself, it is what it is, and there's nothing I can do about it, and move on. And through Grant's inspiration and through the work that I do as a coach, it's so vitally important to focus on the good stuff and to focus on what you want. And I do believe that the world works in a mysterious way. You know, I've read a lot of books about the law of attraction, and we all know that if you give out good stuff, you get good stuff back. Now, you don't necessarily know how the good stuff is going to come back, but it does come back. And when I'm sitting with Grant and we're talking, and when I surround myself with people like him and you, Phil, we have good, positive conversations about opportunities that are available. Your mind starts to open and you become receptive to what's available. You start seeing things that you hadn't noticed before.
I've met Phil for the first time today, and already I can feel his positive energy. None of us want to be surrounded by negative energy. Most creatives, and I assume collectively, we are a fairly creative trio. But creativity thrives on positive energy and positivity. Sorry, I cut across you there, Phil. You were going to say something.
No, not at all, actually. What I was going to say was that it's very interesting that you pick up on what you say about positive thinking and positive mental attitude, because that absolutely is my mantra. Wherever possible, I will always try my absolute best to see the silver lining in a bad situation. And even though I can't, and I know this isn't a competition, but I'm just saying, although I can't begin to imagine what you and your family have been through in recent times, Grant, I have had a fair share of things that have certainly tried my emotional limitations. And every single time, in the heat of the moment, absolutely, totally beside myself, but then I think, right, okay, what can I take out of this? And more often than not, I will take something out of it for the better. So the example I always give is to go right back to the school days. And when I was in the classroom, regrettably, I wasn't the finest student around. And furthermore, to top it all off, I was actually quite badly bullied. I hate the word, but it is true. And ultimately, it conjures up all sorts of horrible images. But let's not dwell on that. What bullying means is you can either become a victim of it and really doubt yourself and think to yourself, I'm a nobody, I'm a nothing, I'm everything that those illegitimates think I am. Or you can look at the true meaning behind it. What they're doing is they are finding faults from themselves and projecting it onto you. And sadly, I learnt that after I left school. But as soon as I learnt that, that taught me to have confidence in myself to the degree that I have carried with me throughout my working life now to date, where I almost don't care what someone thinks of me. I would never do anything to deliberately offend or upset anybody if I can help it. And I certainly, obviously, would rather people had a good impression of me. But it has taught me ultimately to think to myself, be the best you can, do what you do, and if someone has a problem with it, that's their problem, not yours.
You are spot on, and I'll tell you why you're spot on. I've never really been that bothered by what people say about me, because I know the people who know me and really know me will say nice things about me. The people that don't know me, it actually doesn't matter because they don't know me. I talked about not sweating the small stuff. In a way, what somebody says about you and caring about that is sweating the small stuff.
I think it's a valid point, but I think I've become more like that as I've got older. But I think when I was younger, I did worry a lot about what people thought about me. And it was, and I see it in my children now that they're concerned about what people think about them. But I think that's something that comes with maturity.
That's because we're not born knowing who we are. We have to go through life experiences over years and sometimes decades, and we pick up pieces along the way until we become fully formed. Now, the three of us probably aren't even fully formed today. There'll be more life experiences that will help shape us, but you're not born formed. It's those life experiences that ultimately form us.
And also, and I totally believe that. And one of the things that I've been looking at recently is what I call the gray area, because we're taught very much about being positive or negative, right or wrong, rich or poor, black or white, failure and success. They're all opposite ends of the scale. And what I've been looking at recently is how can I find a balance? How can I be either not negative nor positive, but find a balance somewhere in the middle? Where's the place for me, and where are the place for others who are listening to this, where they feel the most comfortable? And I'd be interested to know where you two are on that scale.
Ah, but being comfortable with who you are and actually being proud of living, as it were, in the middle of the thing we call life, I think are two very different things, because someone could actually be in quite a good position, but up here they don't realize they are, and therefore they're unhappy with what they've got. But if you are in that proverbial middle, and as long as one has the attitude that there will always be and always is, A, someone who is worse off than you, but B, recognize there's always someone better off than you as well, then that, I believe, carries you far in life.
To my point of standing in the queue, Phil, you've just crystallized it there and then. You've embodied exactly what I've said about being in the queue, somebody better, somebody worse, and you not being happy with your position. But I am really, really comfortable with who I am. And I wake up every day, I do this thing which we as humans are not very good at doing, which is holding that mirror up to ourselves. And I hold that mirror up to myself every day to make sure I'm the best husband, dad, son, friend I can be. And we're all chameleons. We're all different things to different people. And I try and change the things in me that I don't like. But I don't try and change the things in me that others don't like. I'm not prepared to do anything about that. I want to be a human being who's giving and caring with a good moral compass. And if I do things, if I have idiosyncrasies that you don't like, I'm not really that fussed, as long as I can be the best version of myself that I can be.
That's one of the reasons I love you so much, Grant. And that's one of the things that you've taught me.
Let's go to bed.
Good Lord. Well, whilst you two do that, I'll just offer my very simple mantra in life, is that I try wherever possible to be thankful for what I have, not ungrateful for what I don't have. Just before we ran out of time, gentlemen, you teased us a little earlier on, Grant, to say that you might give us a little more insight into what it is that you do. So perhaps that you can now reveal to us exactly what it is your organization does.
I founded a business in the early 90s called Louis Kennedy. We simply put, facilitate partnerships between big brands and big charities. You can find out what we do at louiskennedy.com. So big brands, big charities. If you think about Comic Relief and Sainsbury's, big brand, big charity, we facilitate the partnership. We work with both parties to develop big fundraising initiatives. Our work has raised over $250 million in social good. That's the tangible. There's also some phenomenal intangible that we've delivered through our work. And I'm very proud of what we do. It is a niche sector, although every agency on the planet is now wanting to talk to brands about purpose, because if you don't have purpose, you don't have a brand. But we've been doing it a long time. We're behind, you know, Red Nose Day and Pudsey Bear. And I still get a kick out of the good that we as a business deliver.
Well, bravo, say I. And Graham, if people want more information about you, remind them where they go.
Okay, they can contact me on gg@passionateaboutbusiness.co.uk or the website address passionateaboutbusiness.co.uk.
And if for whatever ridiculous reason someone might want to get in contact with me, you'll find me over social media as @MrPhilDave. Gentlemen, this conversation has been a real treat and a real pleasure. Thank you very much indeed to Grant Morgan and, of course, Graham Godfrey.
Thank you.